David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. I'm so glad you're here, and we have a very special guest. It's Kevin Hellman, and he is an amazing pitch consultant. Today, we're going to talk about the three components of a perfect pitch, understanding what a good decision is, and also the importance of effective communication. And these are three topics that are very important, especially if you want to be successful in your industry, successful in your business, and successful as an entrepreneur. You know, we need to understand these three components in order to really be successful. And I'm so glad to have you here today, Kevin. Can you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure. So Kevin Hellman, as you said, I'm based in Toronto by way of London, England. So my accent's a little bit off. I call it mid-Atlantic. So for those who are trying to figure out where I'm from. And so I've been in Toronto for about 30 years, and I've been predominantly in sales my whole life, sales and business development, longer than I'd care to admit to. And predominantly the last 15, 16 years, really in pitching and presenting. So as into helping individuals and organizations win those must-win pitches. I've had several leadership roles, most recently head of sales and growth, talent development, sales effectiveness, sales enablement, everything sales for one of the largest HR consulting firms in the world. And I was also lead pitch coach. So really trying to drive and improve win rates across multiple lines of business in those must-win pitches. I got two grown boys. One's actually in the UK, one's in LA. I try not to take it personally. They're getting as far away from me as possible. And you know, I love to golf, and I just love to help people win and to communicate as effectively as possible.
I love it. I love it. And I love what you do because, you know, I love marketing. You know, I love to help people. I'm very into self-improvement. That's why I have this podcast, but I've always had a passion for marketing. I love it because it's creative. You have to really think about, you know, when it comes to marketing, there's a lot of creativeness that goes along with it. And when you make your pitch, you know, the first thing I want to talk about is the pitch because it's so important. And I think a lot of people do not know how to make a really good pitch. You have one type of person that will write their whole life story in a pitch, and right. it won't even be looked at. One, it's overload, you know. And you know, at one point back in the day, they did do things like that. They did write those long pitches out, but that's long and gone. You know, that was like a couple of decades ago. It's no longer the 80s, you know, or early 90s. You don't write those long pitches anymore. Nobody wants to be overloaded with information. And every industry has to be presented differently. You know, you really have to, you know, show your, you know, where you shine in a different way. And you know, and when you're even in a room with somebody and you're presenting yourself and you have to pitch yourself or pitch an item or a service and you're trying to win over the client, you know, some people sound like a salesman and that will turn a client off completely because who trusts a car salesman? Salesman, when you think of salesman, you think, you know, nothing positive comes in. You want to present yourself in a positive manner that a person is going to have that bond and trust with you. They immediately feel something and then they start to draw trust. And then they start to say, this is the type of person I want to do business with. This is the type of person I want to invest in their product or service. And, you know, and even when a person reads your letter and you're trying to get some type of connection with that person, if you get an email from a person, you want to make sure that it's written in a way that it's going to really intrigue the person to want to know more. So you have your email one, you're not, you know, that's not personable, but a lot of people will send out those cold emails. I always like to really talk to the person because I think that's the most effective way. It's really to communicate, hear each other's voices. If you could actually be in a room or a Zoom, you know, that's even better. You know, and those are the type of conversations that I want to go over is that when it comes to all these different types of pitching, you know, how does a person have, you know, develop the perfect pitch? And what is a perfect pitch in your eyes?
Great question. And yeah, you've mentioned and covered a lot there. And even the word pitch, I think sometimes the word pitch is people think of it as something really, really formal, which it absolutely can be. It can be a finalist pitch where it's competitive against you and your competitors. And a pitch can be pitching an idea to one person, your boss. You know, you're trying to pitch a recommendation or an idea or something along those lines. So I use pitch relatively loosely, but it's really when you're trying to influence somebody to some sort of decision or to buy in. But get back to your question. So the perfect pitch is one that connects deeply with the audience. And then it sort of, not only does it connect, but it drives a decision that obviously you're looking for. So if you're looking for buy-in, if you're looking for somebody to say yes to your products and services, that's really, that's the nirvana of a perfect pitch, getting the yes. So it's working backwards for how do we get the yes? And I think that the intuitively people will know this. And it's kind of like that big, call it the sort of the biggest chasm in the world. It's the 6 inches between, you know, our ears, which is the difference between knowing and doing. And so most people understand that you should make it about your audience first. And usually when I'm engaged with clients, they'll say, well, we do that. But when you really dig into the process, they really are not. I think most people will take decks and materials that they regurgitate over and over again. They'll change one or two slides, maybe take the client's name and put the new client's name in there, and then, you know, assume that they've done their work with the client. But really, the perfect pitch is about defining your strategy for this particular pitch. And the way that I would define a strategy is, it's probably best if I tell it in a story. Most times, sitting in front of clients, I'll ask them if there's one decision maker, just for simplicity's sake. You have somebody, let's say it's you, Stacey. Stacey, you're the decision maker. And I ask the client, okay, so I want you to fast forward 6 weeks from now when Stacey has made the decision. Stacey's walking along the corridors of her office, and her boss bumps into Stacey and asks Stacey, Stacey, have you made a decision on this pitch? And you say, yes, actually, I've chosen Kevin. And then your boss asks you, well, why did you choose Kevin? And you say, well, I chose Kevin because. And your job in the strategy is to fill out all the words that come after the word because. I chose Kevin because he was trustworthy, because he demonstrated that he knew our needs on an intimate level. Whatever the words are, that's how you have to build your strategy. So that does take a little bit of sometimes guesswork, especially if you don't know the decision maker. But when people understand this is how you'd sort of develop a strategy, because it's more about what the client wants and needs than what we're trying to push onto the client. So it makes them more externally focused, if that makes sense. So I would say that there would be a deep understanding of how people communicate. Because again, if we're going to pitch, I need to know how you communicate. Are you a very detail-oriented individual? Are you a bottom-line focused individual? Are you more big picture, high level? Because again, that's going to influence how my message is going to land on you. And by the way, that's how people make decisions as well, which we can talk about a little bit later, the decision-making process. So a lot of work is done on the really understanding the audience, how they communicate, and then their motivators and needs. What do they want versus what do they need? You know, needs are rational, and wants are emotional. So let's start to unpack those types of things. And then even do things along the lines of, what do you think that this person thinks about us versus our competitors, our strengths and our weaknesses? So the first piece of a perfect pitch is unpacking that versus let's start with the deck, let's start with the story, let's show them about our products and services. I think we were talking before a little bit, and I talked about, it's kind of like a bad first date. It's let's not get up there and stand and just talk about ourselves for an hour and look how great we are, look how many offices we have, look at our annual revenue and all this stuff, and not really be interested in the other person. And so that wouldn't be a very good first date. And that's how people tend to pitch. And so it's let's unpack what this person cares about. That's the first piece. So that's where a lot of the work is done. Then once we have the strategy and understand the client, the way they make decisions, what resonates with them. Well, now we've got to put it into the story piece. So you have the strategy piece, then the story, and then the story piece is fantastic because that's all about how do we make sure that our messages that we've created land.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion, capital at risk.
In the most compelling way, and there's lots of frameworks for effective storytelling. People don't use those either. If you look at books and movies, they follow very defined frameworks because they work. They take people on an emotional journey. So how do we take people on an emotional journey that gets them to what matters most to them? That's the second piece. And then the third piece, Stacey, is really about the delivery and the execution. How do we execute this? So if it's a virtual meeting, how do we do it in a way that is impactful for the audience? If it's face to face, it's the same thing. And that's your delivery skills. How do we exude and portray first impressions? Because most pitches are won and lost within the first 10 minutes. So again, getting off to a poor start is really hard to recover from. So those are the three components that I call a perfect.
And I think you made excellent points. And definitely, I was saying that yesterday. I was saying, your first impression is your only impression. We grew up with that. Our parents always, drill that into our heads, but it's so true. The first impression you make on a person is going to be, it's going to stick with them, and it's very hard to get that unstuck, it's so you really need to think about, and put thought into how are you going to present yourself. And, like you mentioned also, it's not about just, taking a presentation, taking two slides and changing a few things on the top, which I've seen so many people do. And, you just see that, and people aren't stupid. People are just like, they're just shaking their heads, another salesman, and then they lose respect and trust for you. And once they lose that respect and trust, you're not getting that back. So you really have to put effort into your pitches, and you really have to think about each individual person you're talking to, because the personality of the person matters. Because, are you dealing with a type A personality? Are you dealing with an emotional type person? Are you dealing with a sensitive person? Are you dealing, you have to really look at the type of person you're dealing with, and then understand real quickly in your head, I'm dealing with this type of person. I know that if I approach this a certain way, I'm going to connect with this person. Where, if you do it a different way, you're not going to connect.
No, absolutely. And then recognizing that, it's a study. I mean, this again is a key skill. And the book that I would recommend, there's DISC profiles and Myers-Briggs and lots of different diagnostics. DISC is great and very popular right now. But one I particularly like because it was relatively simple was by Bolton and Bolton, and it's called People Styles at Work, but it's not necessarily at work, and it actually gets into relationships, at home. And it's absolutely fascinating. It's a quick read, but if you study that book has I think won millions of dollars in contracts for me because you can quickly identify where people communicate by their way they email, by the way they communicate face to face, even by their office space. I can walk into somebody's office space and have a clue into how this person likes to communicate. The problem with communication is that We like to communicate in the way that we like to receive the communication. So if
Yes.
I'm highly analytical, okay, I like highly analytical communication, and I will probably communicate that way. The
Right.
problem is that the other three quarters of the population are not that way inclined.
Yes.
And so recognizing where other people are, and then having, and flexing a little bit. And it's not about being, disingenuous or anything like that, but it's just about understanding, well, if I'm highly analytical and I'm dealing with somebody who's the absolute opposite, they're visionary, big picture, they don't like details. Well, I
Yeah.
need to then start to flex my style. So the first thing to do is to recognize where you communicate from,
Yes.
because it's not the audience's responsibility to flex to you. It's the speaker's or the presenter's responsibility to flex to the audience,
Yes.
period. So understanding that, and then recognizing the audience. I mean, I've walked into meetings before where it's been the first meeting, and within 15 seconds, wow, this person is squarely here by the
Yeah.
questions they ask, by their body language. It's unbelievable, actually. It's just pure gold.
Yeah.
Because again, now I know that if I'm going to communicate with this person, I'm going to do it in the theme, and then that's going to help with influence.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And that's very important. Like I had a mentor who was who he dealt with his thing was body language, and he came from the military, and he used to have to interrogate the terrorists, and when they had them in captive, and so he learned a lot about he was taught thoroughly about body language. So when he came back into the civilian world, he decided to teach how to use body language as a tool for business. So the
Wow.
way you shake the person's hand, how do they shake your hand back? How do they sit? How are their arms? How are they looking at you? What's their tone of voice? All these things. You could be speaking to somebody in business. They could be saying one thing, but you can clearly look at their body and know that that's not really what they're thinking.
Love that. I love that. And that's one thing that also drives me a little bit bonkers sometimes is when people are internally focused, or we're focused on us and our pitch and everything about us and not the audience, the
Yes.
amount of times that you'll sit in a pitch and somebody will say something or ask a question, and somebody in the audience, the decision maker, reacts poorly to it. I actually saw this quite recently, and nobody's noticing that either they're not getting it or they're disagreeing. And people are so attached to their agenda and they don't want to get off script. And I don't advocate scripting, by the way, but
Yeah.
it's all about don't take me off of my path. And it's like, well, this person just literally screwed their face up at something you just said. Probably now is the time to just stop, pause, and say, did that not land well? Do you want to ask a question? Whatever, follow up with the person. And again,
Exactly.
that's just normal conversation. You would never
Right.
do that with a friend if you're having a conversation and they kind of looked at you sideways. You
Yeah.
wouldn't just you just wouldn't carry on. But yet, again, that goes down to where are we focused? Do we focus on ourselves or are we focused on the audience?
100%. Yes, that is so important. And there's been many times where if I stop myself and I, and then I ask the question, do you have any questions or are you not understanding something? Can I clarify something for you? And then they will sometimes, they might give a bullet point or they might actually, a lot of times I would see them open up and be truthful. And that's when you could actually fix the situation and maybe possibly make a sale.
That's where the gold lies. It's when it's those cues and clues that people will sprinkle out there for you, because sometimes then you haven't built the trust that they're going to tell you their deepest, darkest secrets,
Yes,
right? That
exactly.
requires, and if you think about the questions that you can ask a stranger, probably two directions in the time,
Right.
right? Without it getting weird. But then if you think about best friends, you can ask them anything. And so when we have these interactions, they're not going to cough up to you. If you ask the question, well, what's the three most important things in this for you?
Yeah.
Which is a perfectly good question. They're probably going to say things like, well, price and deadlines and solution, but they're not really going to give it to you because you haven't earned that
Right.
trust yet. So, but when you see, people can't mask that, going back to the body language.
Yeah.
I'm a poker player too, so tells and body language is something that I love to pay attention to. So when somebody does react to that, they cannot hide it. That is a perfect cue to dive into Find out what's the challenge here. You know, did I say something that hit a nerve? Tell me more. Now you've opened up an area
Yeah.
which could be what really matters. What you thought matters maybe doesn't anymore. Now there's a clue into what does matter. So absolutely, it's critical.
Exactly. Now you talk about emotional decision making. Can you explain to me what emotional decision making is so any of the listeners who are unfamiliar with that term have a clear understanding?
Yeah, I'd love to. And I think this is one of the golden nuggets that I've learned over the years. And there's so much research on rational versus emotional and decision making. Actually, Henry Ford, I think, famously said, people do things for two reasons, the right reason and the real reason. And so it's and it's all and he's, you know, so true. The right reason are the rational reasons, and the real reasons are the emotional. And so
Right.
when we make decisions, I think the research usually lands, and it's been done decades after decade after decade, and the number is roughly the same. It's about 80% of a decision is emotional.
Right.
So the rational side of that are the things like price and features and functionality and deadlines and the team, and you know, can you do what you need to do? And it's like a tick box exercise.
Right.
That gets you to a certain selection. So that will get you to the finals. So can you tick these boxes? Are you in the price range and so on and so forth? That's
Right.
rational. Emotional is what drives the final decision. So if you think about decisions that we make, let's say buying a house. So let's say impactful decisions. When
Right.
you buy a house, you start off with okay, well, this is our price range, our budget, this is the neighborhood. We
Right.
need this many bedrooms. Do we need a backyard and a front yard? Do we want a swimming pool? Whatever it is, your criteria. So you then start with that. You probably give it to the real estate agent and
Yeah.
off they go, right? So
Right.
that's your rational. This area, this price, these features, and all that good stuff. And then
Yeah.
you get, let's say, nine houses that come back. The agent goes, great, I've got all of these for you to look at. And you'll look at some of them right away and just say, don't like it. No, it's too far away from here. And that's all on your rational. Then you'll probably end up with maybe three or four.
Right.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Then you go see them because it's like now you have your final ones.
Yeah.
This is where the emotional stuff kicks in because your rational tick box has been ticked.
Yes.
Now it's emotional. And you'll usually walk into a house and you'll look at it and it's okay. It has a lot of the things that we wanted. It's not that ideal. And maybe you get another next one's, oh, I like this one. This is good. And then you'll probably walk into one where you'll go, this is the one.
Yeah.
It's in the best part of the neighborhood, maybe. Maybe it's got a white picket fence. It's got whatever it is. It's emotion is how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And that is usually what you will end up picking. And
Right.
so the and it's the same for other sort of large decisions that we have. It's around emotion, people around brand. I mean, if you think about things like Apple and other brands, you have an emotional attachment to that brand. It's
Yeah.
not rational. You
Right.
can go buy a phone. Are you buying an iPhone because it's necessarily the best phone on the market? Perhaps, but rationally, there's probably others that have other functionality that may suit you, but you're attached to the brand and the ecosystem.
Right.
And so this happens in the most rational businesses. You know, I just came from the HR consulting firm, which hired the most actuaries, I think, of any organization in the world. So even dealing with actuarial pitches, which are as rational as you can get, if the buyers are still buying from an emotional perspective.
Right.
So one example I can give you as a story, if that's okay, Stacey,
Oh,
would be
definitely.
I used to work for a company called Rogin SI, and Rogin SI were very well known for their pitch consulting business. They were, I think they had four pitches to the Olympic Committee, the IOC, for four different cities, New York, Sydney, Vancouver, and London. And they won three of them. So they won three out of four Olympic pitches, which are billions of dollars. And so that's an unheard of success rate. But I want to talk specifically about the pitch that London won. And I'll try and go as quickly as possible. So the way that the Olympic pitches are done is in stages. So you have a bunch of cities that say, we want to win this Olympic for this, in 2020,
Yeah.
2030, whatever it may be. And
Right.
it's about a 2-year process of pitch after pitch after pitch. And then they just cut down the contestants, so to speak. Okay. It came down to, so Paris was leading, and I forget which year London was actually off the top of my head, but Paris was leading, I believe, the whole way and leading by a long way. So they pitch, the results come out, percentages,
Right.
4 to 3, down to 2. So it came down to the last two. London was behind, and I don't again remember the percentages, doesn't matter, but they were behind. They've been behind from the get-go.
Right.
And as part of the pitch process, it's going back down to let's go and think about the emotional criteria for the audience. Let's go back to the audience. How do we flip this around? Again,
Right.
billions of dollars on the line. And so it wasn't about the rational, because it's the rational is the security, the infrastructure, where are the subways, all of that stuff, location to highways and stuff. That was all the same. And in fact, if anything, I think Paris's was better than London's were. And so they went back to the war room and they decided to go back to the audience and think about that. And so the IOC committee are relatively senior individuals who are ex-athletes, most of them.
Yeah.
And they have children and grandchildren. And so they thought about, well, how do we get into, the emotional criteria for this audience now? Because that's where we're behind there. And then they came up with this idea. And if you go, I think it's on YouTube somewhere, the actual pitch. Because every time I watch the video, it makes what hair I do have stand up on the back of my neck, because it's awesome. And they realized, and they pitched back to the IOC and said, your job as the IOC is really one thing and one thing only. And that's to ensure that the Olympic Games goes on and on and on and becomes more and more successful. That's your legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. And the only way you're going to do that is by targeting children. Because I think the viewership of the Olympics was starting to dwindle. And they
Yeah.
built this campaign around knowing that the audience has children and grandchildren. And they basically showed videos of children all around the world, in all sorts of different countries and all sorts of backgrounds, looking at, old TVs of the Olympic Games, and you can see them looking up and watching athletics and gymnastics and whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Their eyes open wide, and you can see they're like, wow, that's so cool. And then they fast forward to they're a little bit older, and you can see them. Maybe they have skates on and they're falling over, or they're trying to do track and field.
Yeah.
And it morphs them into actually being athletes, but it's in a complete emotional journey. And the
Right.
message was, you have one job, and your legacy is to ensure the success of these games. The only way you're going to do that is through kids. And so London committed to children are free. They came out with all these strategies to
Yeah.
really land on the children. And they had the prime minister help with the pitch and all of that good stuff. And in the final reveal, you had the two cities, and Paris was adorned with all the Olympic regalia ready for the win. And it came down to the announcement, and it was a big shock.
Yeah.
London won. And that was just an example of, if you focus on the rational there, and that's a billions of dollars in a pitch. That was won through the emotional drivers of the audience,
Right.
getting them to feel something, getting them to move to a decision. So that would be an example of, and kudos to Rogen SI for figuring that one out, because that was a big flip. And
Yeah.
I've seen that over and over again, Stacey. So it's a tough one, because people sometimes think emotion is a little touchy-feely and a little soft. But what drives decisions, people's motivators and needs, again, is emotional. And selling people what they want and then kind of deliver what they need is also very important, because
Yeah.
needs are rational. I know that I need to drink 6 glasses of water a day. I know I need to go to the gym. I know I need all these things, but needs don't drive behaviors.
Right.
Wants drive behaviors. So thinking about the decision maker, what do they want? What's in it for them personally? So they have goals organizationally. Okay, I have to tick the boxes. This needs to suit and fill this need. But if I'm responsible for this decision, what does that mean for me personally? What's at risk for me? That's emotional as well.
And I've seen that many times. You see that during elections, you know. You see sometimes you think it's going to go a certain way, but it depends on the economy of the, of that country, you know, and what, you know, what the needs of the people who are living in that country are, you know, and that's what that's going to drive them, you know. And you've seen that many, many times. It's, you know, when things are going on, it's really what the wants and the needs are of, you know, of the majority. And that's what's going to drive decision making, is really that the wants and the needs. You could look at things rationally and you can look at things from, you know, a rational perspective, and you know, but when you bring in emotion and you look at the current state of things, that's what's going to be the driver. If you have a business and the business is, you know, it, you know, it's it let's say the business is doing really well, and then but then, you know, certain things are not, you know, meeting to par, and that, you know, people are not looking, you know, they might have a certain product that's like thriving, but that's not, you know, but it, and it's starting to slow down, and they see immediately that the wants and the needs are shifting, you know, while emotionally, you know, the consumers are changing their thoughts and their wants and their needs, the company is going to go and service and tend to the needs of the consumer. Even though this product is driving, it's going uphill, then they're starting to see a sudden shift. As soon as they see that sudden shift, and they see that the consumer's wants and needs are changing, they're going to immediately jump on board before any destruction and any problems occur. You know, so wants and needs play a big factor, you know, and it
It's
really
huge. It really does. I mean, if you think about it, it really emotional, especially in a buying decision, is how it makes you feel. You know, if somebody buys a really expensive watch, it's not
does.
because it tells time. If somebody buys, you know, expensive purse or anything with the brand, it's because it makes you feel good, and that's fine. Somebody buys a Ferrari versus it's and it's fine, but it's people have to understand and admit they're buying it because they're fulfilling an emotional need, and that's what we do as humans.
That's a
We
perfect
say we
example.
deserve it, we want it, you know, and that's fine. And so your decision makers have the same wants and needs. And you know, another example of where I saw that happen, and a true story was in a pre-meeting on a big RFP, we met with four ladies, and the decision maker introduced her team, and she was new to the role about 8 months, and introduced the rest of her team, which was three other ladies. And the shortest amount of time that somebody had been with this organization was 23 years. That was the shortest, up to like 35 years. So very tenured individuals. And it was a very, very large transportation company who had a very distinct culture. And so she introduced herself and said, you know, I'm responsible for this RFP and this contract. It's one of the largest that we've issued in this department. Introduce herself and her tenure and her team. And we sat there and we talked all about the project. And then we came out afterwards and debriefed. And I was asking the team, okay, what did you hear that was important? And they talked about, well, they talked about the culture. They talked about it was the largest RFP and all this needs to be on deliverables or all this and that. Yeah, great. And I said, well, what I heard that was the most important thing is she's only been there 8 months. She's new, and she's got this group of individuals who the shortest tenure is 23 years, and there's this culture that they kept talking about, which is very distinct. Because again, culture is very distinct. And it was like, well, so what do you think she's thinking about this if this goes wrong, right? And just before the RFP, I remember calling her, and you know, asking her. It was a bit of an excuse. I just wanted to get one more call before the pitch went in, and it was I just wanted to make sure that everything's on point, that you have everything that you need, anything else that we should know. And she said no, and I think I turned around and said, listen, I want you to know that it wasn't lost on me that this is a big deal for you. You know, you're new to the organization, you've come into this culture, you've got people with long tenure, and I just want you to know there's no way I'm going to let you fail on this. You know, this is not a perfect business. Things go bump in the night, but you just need to be able to sleep at night knowing that you can call me, you know, 24/7, 365. We're not going to let this. We're not going to let you fail at this.
Yes.
Things like that. And by the way, we won. So now I'm not saying it was all down to that, but again, if you think about what this person wants versus
Yes.
needs, those are the things that usually make the difference, kind of that make the difference.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And you also talk about, you had mentioned the importance of effective communication, and I feel that's so important because sometimes I feel that the way our generation is changing, we're so involved. And I mentioned to you before the show, we're people are so involved in their gadgets, we're so involved in technology that we have spent more time on our phones than we do communicating with other individuals. And I think that affects us when we go into the working world and we have to actually communicate with others. We're lacking skills and we're lacking, effective communication skills. What is your feel on effective communication?
I think that it's one of the single most important skills that you can learn. And again, I was watching on Instagram, and I forget the name of them, but they have a little microphone and they go up to really important or successful business people. I think they wait outside their buildings and they ask them, have you ever been broke? And there was this gentleman, I was watching it yesterday, and I kind of chuckled. And the guy's made hundreds of millions of dollars, never went to college. And they asked him a question, what? In the quick 20 seconds, what do you think the most important skill is that they don't teach in business school that they should, that correlates to success? And he just looked at the camera and he said, "Communication skills. Learn it. Without it, it's almost impossible to be successful." And I just remember that resonated. So, and also from having my leadership roles at these large firms, when it comes to hiring and promotions. When you look at the folks who navigate sort of quicker and elevate their careers, it's usually because they have these key skills. And same with leadership. I think it's one of the most focused competency of exceptional leaders is their ability to communicate. So
Yes.
individuals, and I was talking to my son, who's now getting to that stage in his career at 30, where he's talking to clients and he has to present, and it's a key skill that can be learned. So number one, it's absolutely imperative and it correlates directly to people's success. Is it the smartest people who always get promoted? My experience is actually not. It's sometimes the people who communicate more
Yes.
effectively than others. And the good news is it is a learned skill. You can absolutely learn it. So, and given social media and the way that we communicate, landlines, I don't want to date myself. Things like that was the only way to communicate, and firm handshakes and eye contact and all that good stuff has been diluted a little bit because of that. But certainly in the corporate world, certainly when you're pitching and presenting, or the spotlight's on you, and it doesn't have to be necessarily just delivery skills. You've got to be like a perfect presenter. It helps, but how you construct your message, even quick tips for how do you kick off a meeting? Do you set context? I mean, there's little frameworks and little nuggets that you can learn that you can teach people that are so simple that, and again, good news is some of the smallest things make the biggest difference. I think people get scared with, wow, that's such a big topic, communication skills, but there's probably two or three tiny little frameworks or structures or little tweaks that you can do that people sort of look at you and go, wow, that was really good what you just did there. And they will have no idea what you did. They'll just know that they like it. And you'll be the only one who knows what you're doing. And it's easy and simple and you can do it, those things. So yeah, effective communication to me is a core competency and skill.
It's funny because too, it's like I remember I went to a speaking event and the speaker comes on the stage and he's very well known. And the first thing he says to the audience is, "I suck at speaking, but I know marketing," he says. And he was great when it came to teaching what he had to teach to the audience. And he was very clear in his message. He had great ideas. He really, I think, brought he turned on a lot of people's light bulbs and a lot of people learned from him. But he was not he was not the greatest speaker, but he knew his stuff. He knew how to present it, and he taught a lot of things that probably most of the audience didn't know, that wanted to know. So he scored, he definitely scored with the audience. But I thought it was very funny. He warned the audience ahead of time. If you're looking for that great speaker, it's not me,
I
but
love
I
it.
know my stuff, and that was
That's
his first message.
No, I love that because that goes back to he got his strategy right. What the audience wants to sort of think, feel, know, and do. What do I? Is it going to resonate with them? But he obviously had his story and structure all laid out, and you can get away with that on the delivery side. Now, obviously, if he had the third one, it would be even better. But you can get away with that because the audiences are usually empathetic to speakers because nobody wants to be up there. That poll that was done that said the number one greatest fear was public speaking, and number four is dying. So it's like, wait, what? That means that you'd rather people would rather be in the box than give the eulogy, right? It's like it's a little bit backwards. So I get it. If public speaking is not everybody's strength, so and people again are empathetic because they don't want to be up there. Unless you're doing it professionally, then people probably don't give you that much of a break. But yeah, you can. That's great. As long as the first two are more important than the third, for sure. Unless you're really, really distracting. But the story usually carries.
And then there are speakers that just wowed me because they came up to the stage, they had such confidence, such poise, and they were so when they were so meaningful when they spoke. Like it wasn't just because they had to be up there. You could tell they wanted to be up there.
Yeah.
You could tell they had a passion, that this was their love, that this is, this was their goal in life. Like their true calling in life. They found their true identity and they made it known through their speech, through their effective communication. And I think, just the presentation alone, just showing how compassionate they were to the topic, I think they gained so much respect and trust from the audience right then and there.
Yeah, it's hard to beat really good presenters because they can carry the weakness in the first two sections. But yeah, I mean, watching a great speaker is pretty awesome. But I think again, people think that they just wake up in the morning and do it, and that's not true. Steve Jobs is a perfect example of that. Considered a fantastic speaker, but he used to turn up to the venue 1 week before the presentation, and he would be on that stage all day for 7 days, over and over and over and over again. And then when
Really?
people, oh yeah, when people saw it, they're like, wow, it's so natural. It's not natural at all.
No.
It was preparation to the nth degree. And so if you look at leaders or CEOs, senior C-suite individuals, certainly CEOs, probably spend more money on this part of their development, public speaking, communication skills. I know I've worked with CEOs. And that's exactly what they want to work on because they're doing investor conversations, they're doing stuff in front of their organizations, they're out in the media. And so that's what they value the most because it has the biggest impact for them. But they spend literally millions of dollars a year on that key skill, on how to prepare. But I think people think that people are natural at it, but it's skill, it's learned. And so that's one of the ideas I was toying with on the pitching and presenting skills, doing sort of a course on that because that's all taught, that's all structured, and it does make a big impact and a big difference to people if as long as they know each stage and how to go through it.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Now, if you had to take today's conversation and you really wanted to emphasize on some important takeaways, what would be some things that you really want the listeners to understand?
Focus on your audience first, but really focus on your audience. What matters the most to them, their wants versus needs, what from an emotional perspective, how do they communicate? And I think that's pretty much it. Just really, really start there. Form your strategy from there. Then figure out how to make those messages stick. Don't end up with 30, just top three. Try and tell it in a story. People do not remember data and facts. Telling the story is most memorable, and then work on the execution of delivering it. So if it's a virtual practice, rehearse over. The higher the stakes, the more you rehearse. One rehearsal is not enough. Nobody on a Broadway show would just rehearse once. So get it until you're comfortable. So I think that would be it. And I get that there's time constraint with these things. Sometimes you're dealing with lots of these things, but don't underestimate the preparation, and go through these diligently. That would probably be my synopsis of those things.
Yeah, no, I think those are great takeaways. Now, what are some of the services that you provide?
So I provide two core services. So one would be I'll get a call and it'll be, "Hey, Kevin, we have this high stakes situation, presentation, pitch. Can be, raising money, selling a business, new client contracts, whatever it may be. Can you help coach us through that process?" So that would be the number one. Number two would be if it's an organization or a business where their win rates aren't where they need to be and they want to revamp or relook at their pitch process so they can have, sort of a nailed down process that gets them to work through each of these three stages every single time. I work on that as well. So individual pitches or pitch process.
Oh, I love it. Now, you also have some resources on your website for individuals to go to. Can you tell us a little about those?
Yeah, there's, I think this is probably captured in some of the free resources, and there's a blog on there which goes into the three components of pitches and stuff around delivery. So there's some useful tips and tricks there that they can find on the website. They can just click that. Any other questions? I'm happy for people to reach out to me directly if they have any questions or comments. I'm always happy to engage with people. They can also reach me on LinkedIn as well.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, this has been amazing. I thank you so much for coming on the show today. You gave us such great information. It's so, these are things that are so important for to in order to have a successful business, because it's not just the product or service, it's how we present the product or service. It's how we pitch it. And like you mentioned, when you talk about, different types of emotional decision making, and when you talk about effective communication, these are all important components of being successful and growing in your business and really standing out from the rest. Even if you work in a company or corporation and you want to stand out, you want to get promoted, you want people to see what your strengths are, these are things that you really have to learn, understand, and these are things that will help you to elevate to higher levels. So it is definitely an important component.
Critical. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It really is. And it's a passion of mine and I love doing it. And so, I appreciate you having me on the show. I'm not sure if I mentioned the website. It's www.hellmanpitchconsulting.com.
I love it. I love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Stacey. You rock.
Oh, you rock too. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye bye.